Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on this very, very fine day of September 27th, 2013. Yes, and that is Friday for the month. It's the last Friday of the month, and October 1st, the big day coming up. We have Monday. Looking forward to an interesting week next week. But first, let's get to we have a great program today. But let's first get started with the market reports. And markets were weird today. They all did their thing as soon as the markets opened, and they just stayed there all day. Seems like it was light trading on the day, not a lot of action in the markets. You have gold up $13 today at $13.37. It did come off the high of 1345 earlier in trade, and this is about the level where it's settled. Silver's up 6 pennies today at 21.89. We did have a big high today, 22.25, 21.89 currently. Platinum was up 11 bucks at 14.24. And we have palladium up $9 at $733. You have the USDX today was down 0.27 at 80.27. And let's see the paper markets today. Let's go to the Dow. The Dow was down 70 points, 15,258. You also have the NASDAQ down 5 points at 3781. S&P down 6. 1691, and the yield 2.62. So on all the paper markets, it seemed like everything was in the red. It was certainly good to see gold in the green. You have crude oil today. That's trading around just below 103 a barrel. And of course, this is all due. We had that big run up in oil due to Syria. And today, the UN Security Council, they're making progress to get Syria to relinquish its chemical weapons. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. So you expect Monday is going to be an interesting day?
Next week. Next week will be an interesting, you know, it's going to probably turn out to be the same old, same old. You have all this buildup. One of these days, though, we'll have this buildup and something really will happen. And
the trailers are always better than the movie, aren't they?
Yes.
You know, the previews. They got, oh boy, this could be a heck of a movie. And then it wasn't that good a movie. What we're talking about, at least in part, is the idea that the debt limit should be, in theory, should be reinstated no later than the 30th, which is next Monday. That's the end of the fiscal year. In theory, Congress is going to have to authorize an increase in the debt limit on Monday, but that's just theory. But with the government, the law is optional, merely a recommendation. It doesn't really, it might be mandatory for you and me, but for government, it's just a recommendation, and we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. We'll hear more. There will be more, comments and accusations and promises and disputes next week over the debt limit, but will it amount to anything, Melody?
Well, somewhat. I was on Lori Roth's program last night. She asked me what I thought would come about, you know, if the government shut down and if we didn't shut down, and all this hoopla that's surrounding Washington, and, you know, with all the debates going on and all the name calling and finger poking and so forth. And I think, I believe, Al, the problem that we could have. Yes, so what if the government is shut down? We all know that it's not going to affect the main payments, Social Security, any of those types of payments. You're going to have things closed like the parks and recreation, the non-essential type programs. But what I see as a bigger factor is confidence. I mean, confidence is something that keeps the system going. I mean, it keeps our currency going. When you have a fiat currency, that's the only thing that keeps it going. And the numbers for confidence today, you had more Americans grew more pessimistic this month about the economy and their own finances and government budget policies. And that was consumer confidence that was released today by the University of Michigan. The final reading of consumer sentiment dropped to 77.5 in September from 82.1 in August. But that was the second straight decline after confidence had reached a six-year high of 81 in July. So a tremendous amount of confidence. But we're just not talking the confidence in Americans, but also the confidence around the world and those that are holding our debt and so forth. So to me, it could be more of an issue of confidence than who gets paid on Wednesday or not.
You know, when they talk about a con game, or they talk about a con artist as a criminal enterprise, you understand what the word con in front of the game means, and con in front of the artist. It means a confidence game. It means a confidence artist. A con artist is a man or woman who is able to inspire false confidence in other people, right, and then exploit that confidence for their own advantage. A con game is a game that is some sort of a financial transaction that's based on confidence that's unjustified. And based on that confidence, false confidence, people do foolish things. And then they wind up losing their wealth. And it's always fascinated me that the government insists that the monetary system and the economy, it's all about confidence. We have to maintain confidence because confidence is so important and so on. Confidence is the same thing they have in con games and con artists. Same thing. And there's a point to this. All right? This isn't just an interesting little observation or an aside. The truth of the matter is, when you have a system that is based primarily on maintaining confidence, you're almost always walking into some very dangerous territory. And if you exude that confidence, if you have confidence in the people running that con game, the person who is the con artist who's running what you might call a con economy, if you're going to have confidence in that, the moment is going to come when you're going to feel like you're playing three-card Monte out on the streets of New York City. All right? You're going to lose some money before this is done. You want to get into something where confidence is not an issue. If you want to preserve your wealth, you want to get into something that has intrinsic value, it's not based on external confidence, it's there And under those circumstances, in my opinion, you are safest. There is no perfect solution to any of our problems, but there are some solutions that are vastly superior to those that depend on confidence. What else do we have, Melody?
Well, you know, we saw the decline a little bit in gasoline prices today. In the oil prices and gasoline prices, they've been falling also, but they usually do about this time of the year because they're switching over to refining heating oil coming out of the high driving season as everyone takes off for vacations and so forth. And the refineries have been relatively problem-free this year because they really haven't had any bad hurricanes, and none of them have really come offline and so forth. But what surprised me is the numbers for the gasoline. The national average price for a gallon of gasoline is $3.42. That's down from $3.59 on September 1st. This is the lowest price it's been at this time of the year since 2010. And I'm thinking, it's hard. People should still be screaming at $3.42. And it just goes to show the listeners and us how we come to adapt and accept things that are given us. And it really shouldn't be. We shouldn't have to pay $3.42 for gasoline.
Well, you're right. We just take it for granted. I can remember when gasoline was a quarter a gallon. I can remember that as a kid. And now it's up there. And now it's up to $3.42. And it's simply evidence of the persistent inflation that the government has caused over the years.
Mm-hmm.
We're not, the price of gas isn't going up. The value of your labor is going down. And the reason people get, we're confused about this, and we're a little bit blind to it, is because you get a job, and you're being paid a certain amount of money per hour or per week or however, but you have a fixed income pretty much, right? If you had a job making, say, $25 an hour, you made $25 an hour last year, you're making $25 an hour this year, you'll make $25 an hour next year. You think in your mind, I'm making $25 no matter what. And therefore, when the price of gasoline goes up or the price of groceries or whatever, you think the problem, you compare it subconsciously back to your income. And because your income is steady, you think the changes in prices are in the products and the services that you're buying. But they're not. The changes in prices are due to the fact that your income is being reduced by means of inflation. The $25 an hour you made last year is not equivalent to the $25 an hour you make this year, and it won't be equivalent to the $25 an hour you make next year. They'll all be $25 an hour, but the purchasing power is the point, and your purchasing power is declining, and it's been declining steadily throughout most of my lifetime and yours. You are being robbed by inflation. The inflation is being perpetrated by the Federal Reserve in association with the federal government. They want the inflation, and you are being impoverished by it, and they get away with it. Because you think you're making at least as much money as you made last year, and maybe you might even be making a little bit more. You tend to think in terms of your wages rather than your costs. And the result is we are blinded.
Well, look at the money that's being held. People have a CD or a money market account sitting there. Look at what the banks pay. I mean, even if you take government inflation numbers, what, a 1.2 is what they're claiming? Even the paltry rate that the banks pay doesn't even keep up with that low inflation rate that the Fed says that we have. So you're losing against their tiny little inflation rate. And let's take the real look at what the true inflation rate is. What is John?
They'll come in anywhere from, I don't know, they'll come in probably around 9%.
9%?
Mm-hmm.
And you get
John
what?
John Williams at shadowstats.com.
You know, a quarter of 1%? That you get paid with having your money in your bank, that they can that they can do fractional reserve banking and loan out 9 times, 10 times what you have in there. And if you go and you ask them to have your money You have to ask, you have to give notices, you have to warn them. I mean, aren't these signs, Al? Aren't these signs that there's...
Well, there's signs that the government is simply desperate for money.
Absolutely.
That's what it is, as much as anything else. The government is so financially bound up right now, and they know it's getting tighter. You know, I saw, let me see, I had an article up here. You can talk about it. Detroit. New York Times. Here's the headline. $300 million in Detroit aid, but no bailout.
Yeah.
Huh?
I know.
$300 million? You know, if I could talk just a little faster than I already talk, I could get $300 million out of the government. And the city of Detroit, that's all they're going to give them to help with their problems. It says 2 months after Detroit became the largest city ever to file for bankruptcy, top Obama administration officials will be there on Friday to propose nearly $300 million in combined federal and private aid toward a Motown comeback. But what is that $300 million? It's only a fraction of the $18 billion that the city owes. And more, it's a reflection of the budget and political limits on President Obama. He'd like to help Detroit. He'd like to be a little more generous probably than he has been, but he doesn't have the loot to do it. The feds are judging by the way they're treating Detroit. The feds are tight. They're tight for money. They're not exactly broke, but they're getting close to that. And we're, from my perspective, we're hitting that theme I've been hammering for 5 years. What can't be paid won't be paid. When they run out of money, there's going to be a whole bunch of debts. And everybody said, but wait, the government said they'd pay this debt. Well, it isn't going to be paid because they don't have the money. The article continues, the idea of the federal government's responsibility toward Detroit is hardly a settled issue in Washington. Instead, divisions over the question reflect fundamental divide between the two parties over the size and role of government. Some want to give Detroit more. Some want to give them nothing. More than $300 million comes, most of the $300 million to come is federal money, with state and foundations chipping in. About $140 million would go to transit improvement. They divide out how it's going to be. They specify how this $300 million will be spent. But Mr. Sterling, a native of Ann Arbor, Michigan, is quoted as saying, "Our message right from the beginning was, there is nothing we can do to help the bankruptcy. There is no bailout." Okay? Detroit's in hock for $18 billion. There will be no bailout for Detroit. Why? Silly rabbit, bailouts are for banks, not cities. Bailouts are for wealthy people, not ordinary people. The Federal Reserve is pumping $85 billion per month to allegedly stimulate the economy. They're pumping that into the economy, $85 billion a month under quantitative easing, but the government can only give $300 million to Detroit. I mean, it's the whole thing becomes, I don't know, does it make any sense? I'm not in favor, and don't misunderstand.
No.
I'm not in favor of bailing out Detroit and the rest of this, but if anybody's got to be bailed out, it seems to me like it should be the cities before it's the banks, at least if you cared about the people involved. But that doesn't appear to be the issue. So the question then becomes, one of the questions becomes this. Is the government really broke? Is that the reason they're only giving $300 million to Detroit? Or is the government merely very selective about whether it helps the rich or the poor? What do you think, Melody?
Well, you know, I would hate to say that no one should help Detroit. However, you know, part of that article, you know, they were able to, the administration scrounged through the federal budget and found untapped money that either had not flowed or had not gotten out. Well, you know, if they found $300 million, how much more can they find in various places? And my other thing is, why did Detroit get to this position in the first place? You can't help Detroit unless you fix the problems.
Yeah.
Or this money is just going to be, you know, what they used to say, down a rat hole. Yeah, so they're throwing bad money. They're throwing good money after bad money. Fix the problem. My second thing, my other problem is you're going to have wealthy come in here that are control this, and they'll clean up. They'll clean up Detroit on government money, taxpayers' money, and the rich will come in and they will revamp the city and they make it. And then they will make it their own, and they'll make billions and billions and billions of dollars more.
And the taxpayers will put up the money, and the rich will take the profits.
And they'll take the profits. So yeah, I do have a problem with it.
All right, folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 or international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. This is the last day, Melody.
Yes, it is. Well, got one more day. Got the 30th.
Okay. Last radio day.
No, we'll be here Monday.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Are you going to be here Monday?
Well, you have to ask the good Lord about that. I don't have the gift of prophecy. I don't have the gift of prophecy, Melody.
Everybody else does.
I have the gift of analysis and sometimes the gift of ridicule, but I don't have the gift of prophecy.
Well, we have our special. Remember, all orders for the month of September will be placed in a drawing, and on October 1st, we will draw and the names, and we will have two prizes. We have a Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece along the second place winner. We'll have a tube of 1 ounce silver Eagles. 2013s, 20 ounces of silver. So great little packages. All the folks who entered, who made purchases this month, are eligible, and they will be in the drawing for Tuesday. We will do that Tuesday, Al. Don't forget.
You got today and you have today and Monday to place those orders, folks, if you want to get in on that drawing. What's next?
Well, I want to tell the listeners, make sure you go to the website, dgscoins.com, sign up for our weekly newsletter, American Survival. And it's beginning to get a little bit bigger. We're beginning to put additional articles in there, and it's a great little free newsletter. We also want to tell the listeners, if you have any questions for us today, make sure that you call us at 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. If you have any questions for today's program, for myself or Alfred, and any other reminders I need to do, if you have any emails that you have a question, we got some in, send us at questions@dgscoins.com. questions@dgscoins.com. And if you're a late night listener to the program or listen at your leisure and you have a question, email me and we'll make sure we address it on the next radio program.
Okay, I got one here from Americans for Tax Reform, and they report, and this is parallels to some degree what we talked about with Detroit. The government in its has $300 million to help Detroit. Detroit's in the hole for $18 billion. I mean, that's not even sales tax on the $18 billion. It's pretty strange. But in any case, here's an article from Americans for Tax Reform. IRS watchdog: 67 million missing from Obamacare slush fund. Washington, D.C., the IRS is unable to account for $67 million spent from a slush fund established for Obamacare implementation. This is according to Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The Health Insurance Reform Implementation Fund was tucked into Obamacare in order to give the IRS money to enforce the tax provisions of the health care law. The fund, totaling some $1 billion of taxpayer money, was used to roll out enforcement mechanisms for approximately 50 tax provisions of Obamacare. According to the report, specifically, the IRS did not account for or attempt to quantify approximately $67 million from the slush fund of indirect ACA costs, including incurred for fiscal years 2010 through 2012. So the IRS is out to collect money. The government is out to collect money. The government is not out to give much away, at least not to Detroit, and probably not too much to the rest of us. But somebody's up there walking around with an extra $67 million that was liberated from a IRS slush fund. So, Melody, is the IRS glass half empty or is it half full? In other words, should we be angry that someone stolen $67 million from American taxpayers? Or should we be delighted that they've only stolen $67 million and they haven't yet taken the entire $1 billion? At least not yet. What do you think, Melody? Half empty, half full?
Well, it's amazing. $1 billion to implement this Obamacare taxpayers' money. Yeah. People should be screaming. But $67 million, that probably means it was double that. Because they never give you the correct numbers. They always lowball the numbers. I mean, if they say you know, someone mishandled $100 million, that means it was actually $200 million. So, you know, I would likely think that the $67 million is probably a lot higher. And I can only imagine the different areas where money goes missing. I mean, it's just the corruptness of.
Oh, the whole thing's crazy. The whole thing's insane, and it's populated by a bunch of people who don't really care. I remember hearing a story, and this is a true story. This goes back probably about 5 years ago, thereabouts. One of the IRS offices, I don't know where it was, maybe Ohio, I don't recall. The people working in the office thought they were overworked. and they had too many IRS files to deal with. So what they started doing is lifting up the ceiling panels over their desk. And, you know, you've got you understand that grid system that you have above desks in most offices, and you lift one of those ceiling panels up, and then they just stack the extra IRS files on the grid and close the panel so nobody know. And then they wouldn't be on their desk anymore. They wouldn't have to do them. Well, this went on for a period of time until somebody finally put the last file in there and collapsed the whole ceiling on the office. The whole thing fell in, and I don't know how many IRS files were up there, but it finally just exceeded the carrying weight of the grid that supported that ceiling, and the whole thing collapsed. It's just evidence. You got a bunch of dummies. You know, it's thank God. You know, with all the trouble government can make, thank God we got a bunch of dummies up there. They were all intelligent and dedicated. There's no telling how much trouble we might have in this society. As it is, we have more than enough. But in any case, it always amused me to all of a sudden, I just imagine suddenly the ceiling has just collapsed. And how do they explain it to the supervisor? And the files are all scattered and mixed up and the rest of it. I don't know.
Well, we do have a question coming in from Ivan. He says, are not all these activities in theatrics and politics and life is an illusion, a mirage that is perpetrated on people in order to create a disillusion for the common folks in order to satisfy their cry for social and spiritual needs and justice?
Well, I agree that a whole bunch of this stuff is illusory, and it's intended for that basis, and it goes back right to your paper dollars. People do not understand the difference between paying a debt and discharging a debt. Virtually everyone thinks that if you give somebody, you hand them a $100 bill, or you pay off with your credit card or your debit card, or you have paid a debt. And the answer is no, you haven't. Technically, by definitions of terms that have been understood for centuries, you haven't paid the debt until you've paid with gold or silver or something tangible. The idea that you and I are paying our debts with these green pieces of paper is a complete illusion. And it's part of the reason why we have this enormous national debt hanging over our head, estimated by some to be over $200 trillion. That's the Congressional Budget Office says including unfunded liabilities. The debt is $202 trillion, last I heard. Obama and the people in Congress say, oh, we have a debt ceiling at $17 trillion. We've already got $202 trillion in debt. It can't possibly ever be repaid. It's never going to be repaid in full. Never. Not even with... I mean, it just isn't going to happen. The whole thing is an extraordinary illusion. And when you begin to appreciate this, and it's hard to communicate, and it's certainly hard to even believe, the average person, average person listening to the program is going to sit back and say, what's that guy talking about? I can't pay my bills with $100 bills. Of course I can. Well, no, technically you can't. And I know it's a difficult thing to communicate, and it's a very hard thing to believe. But you are living in a world that has become a giant illusion. And the illusion is being maintained, at least for now, in order to keep people calm. Because it's not just a question of whether I'm paying my debts with $100 bills. It's also a question of whether I'm being paid. If I take $100 bills, am I being paid for my time? It's the reason we talked about inflation earlier in the program, and we talked about the man who's making $25 last year and $25 this year and $25 next year, and he thinks his pay is stable over those 3 years, but it's not. He's being robbed of his purchasing power. The 25 last year is not equal to 25 this year, not equal to 25 next year. Why? Because it's paper dollars. It has no fixed intrinsic value. He thinks he's being paid The government knows he's not. He thinks he's getting paid $25 every year. Government knows. No, he's not. No, he's not. We're ripping him off for a couple bucks a year. If inflation is 9%, let's just say 10% for the sake of argument, your $25 last year is only worth $22.50 this year. And next year, it'll only be worth $20 at 10% inflation through all through the 3 years. And you can sit there and say, you have the illusion of making $20 an hour or $25 an hour. But that illusion is constantly being taken away from you. And because you believe in the illusion, you are vulnerable to that theft. If you don't understand the difference between paying a bill and discharging a bill, you pay with gold and silver, you discharge with paper currency, digital currency. Don't understand the difference? You're going to get robbed. It might not be apparent to you. You're going to say, gee, the price of groceries are going up, the price of gas is going up. No, you're being robbed. You're being paid less than you were last year or the year before or the year before that. That's what's happening, and it's happening due to inflation, and the inflation is there because we have these green pieces of paper masquerading as if they were real money. We are caught in an incredible illusion. I mean, it really is something to behold. You get this, and you finally see, say, oh, my God. This is no small thing. It's almost like a kind of hypnotism. The whole world has been seduced by this. In Revelation, in the Bible, God is talking about the time when the world is deceived. The whole world is deceived by the sorcery of Babylon. They call it sorcery. There's a good chance what they're talking about is this fiat currency. I can't tell you that's God's truth. I'm just saying I read it that way. This is a sorcery that has deceived the whole world into taking worthless pieces of paper as if they were valuable. Hard to understand, hard to believe, but apparently true. So Yvonne wants to know, are we caught in an illusion? Absolutely. And one day, though, reality will reassert itself. And when it does, those people who have dedicated their lives to the illusion are going to find themselves stripped of what they thought were assets but turned out to be only paper promises to pay. Holding paper, day's coming, reality will intrude. Do better to hold gold or silver. What else do we have, Melody?
We're heading into the break here. We're going to be talking about the home mortgages, Fannie, Freddie, where they leave a $4.6 billion in collectible foreclosures. And in addition to that, we're going to be talking a little bit about the FHA, how they sent a letter today to Congress saying we're broke.
FHA sent that to Congress today?
Yep.
Well, we still got a minute and a half or something like that. Do you want to start on the FHA right now?
The federal agency that insures mortgages for millions of low and middle income borrowers says it requires a $1.7 billion in taxpayer aid immediately to cover its losses. The head of the Federal Housing Administration sent a letter today informing Congress that it must draw the funds from the Treasury Monday. And this is the first time the agency has taken taxpayer support in its history. The agency, part of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, has been struggling with billions of dollars in losses on mortgages it insures. And the FHA is required by law to maintain reserves equal to 2% of the mortgages it insures. It currently has about $30 billion in reserves. The FHA Commissioner Carol Gallant said in the letter, she said that it is enough to cover future expected losses. So they are in dire straits. They're demanding $1.7 billion.
Maybe they could borrow it from Detroit.
Their timing isn't very good, is it?
Maybe they could borrow it from Detroit. We can suggest that to them later on. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. We're going to start off talking about Fannie Freddie leave $4.6 billion in collectible foreclosures. This is an article from the Washington Times. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two mortgage finance giants whose financial woes required massive taxpayer bailouts in recent years, could be missing out on as much as $4.6 billion in payments from foreclosed mortgages in their portfolios. Freddie Mac alone has not dealt with about 58,000 foreclosures on single-family homes, letting the borrowers go into default instead of paying back the loans. The inspector general said many of those in default are not disenfranchised families down on their luck. Instead, they have the financial capabilities to pay back their loans. Freddie Mac eliminated any possibility of recovery when it did not refer foreclosed mortgages for evaluation of collectability. This organization cost the mortgage company 6,000 potential foreclosures because the statute of limitations expired. The numbers were even worse for Fannie Mae, which did not pursue 44,600 cases because the statute of limitations expired. Inaction by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and other companies caused high levels of non-recourse lending. This lending carries few consequences because businesses legally can't or won't pursue people who default on their mortgages. Now, all of this is interesting to me. They, according to the article, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac failed to collect almost $5 billion in mortgage payments due to, one, disorganization, and two, inaction. Now, those explanations seem reasonable since just about everyone believes that government is so screwed up that disorganization and inaction could easily explain the loss of $5 billion. The article explains that the result of the disorganization and inaction was non-recourse lending, wherein the lender had no legal capacity to sue or foreclose if a borrower defaulted on his mortgage. I don't doubt that the result here was non-recourse lending. I don't doubt the banks had no recourse against these this essentially 100,000 borrowers who didn't repay their mortgages, but I doubt that the cause was government disorganization or inaction. It might have been part of the cause, but I don't think it was predominant. I suspect that the main reason the government couldn't foreclose on over 100,000 mortgage defaults is that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae didn't have and could not acquire the original notes and the actual mortgages or deeds of trust in some states signed by the borrowers. Without those original notes and mortgages, the lenders had no more legal right to foreclose on those 100,000 homes than I do. You know, we have a situation where people take out a loan on the house. All right, to buy the house. And they understand. They took out a loan. Let's pull a number and say they took $200,000 out and borrowed it from the bank. They understand that they have a moral obligation to pay back that $200,000 plus interest over the course of the next 20 or 30 years, whatever the life of the mortgage is. They get that. And they feel obligated to it. And they understand that they have an obligation. They feel they got to do this. They got to pay that if they can. But what they don't understand is that while they have a duty to pay their debt on the mortgage, that's true. They don't have a duty to pay the debt on the mortgage to just any bozo who comes up the front door and says, "Hi, you owe me $200,000 on your mortgage." The only people they have to pay the debt to are whoever holds both the note and the mortgage. They can't be foreclosed if someone doesn't have both the note and the mortgage. Not a copy. Not a copy of the documents. Not a certified record from the county recorder's office of there was a note, there was a mortgage back 8 years ago. Who has the original note? Who has the original mortgage right now today? Because whoever's got those two documents is the only person who has a right to foreclose. Yes, you may have an obligation to pay, but they don't have an they don't have a right to foreclose unless they hold both the original note and the original mortgage. They've got to have your wet ink signature on them. If they don't have those documents, they have no standing in court. Now, where I'm going with this is we've got an instance of about almost $5 billion that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac didn't collect. And it reflects about 100,000 homes that were not, that should have gone into foreclosure and should have been collected on, but weren't. And I am speculating, I can't tell you this is God's truth, but I am speculating that of these 100,000 homes, a sizable percentage, maybe most of them, were unusually well-educated. And they understood that their obligation to pay on the mortgage and on the and to be subject to foreclosure is conditioned. It's only can only be enforced by whoever holds the note and the mortgage. And knowing that, they demanded to see the note and the mortgage. And when they raised that issue, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac could not produce, meaning they had no standing to foreclose or collect on the mortgage. Why couldn't they produce? It's because the geniuses in our economic system devised something called mortgage-backed securities. And we would take mortgages from people and we would bundle them up and use them as financial support to sell bonds and make lots of money. And the bond was deemed valuable because it was based on 50, 100, I don't know how many mortgages would be bundled up and sold with that bond. The result is the mortgages and the notes have been sometimes sliced and diced. They may not even exist in a tangible form anymore, but if they do, they might be in Peking, they might be in South Africa, they might be over in Europe. God only knows where they are. No one can find them. And therefore, no one has a legal right to enforce the mortgage or foreclose on the property. My guess is, while the vast majority of people do not understand these principles, 100,000 did, or some chunk of that 100,000 did. And as soon as they raised that issue and said, "Show me the note," Show me the mortgage. Show it to me. Produce it. And don't give me a copy. Who's got the original now? With my wet ink signature, there's only one original of each of those documents. Who's got it? He has standard. He has status to foreclose, and all the rest of you can buzz off. If you don't have those documents, buzz off. I think that's what may have happened with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. What do you think, Melody? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's just another, you know, with this information coming out along with the information on the Federal Housing Administration, and, you know, it's still here. It isn't gone away. Mm-hmm. And it's just other signs that, you know, things are not improving. And again, because all we hear about is a great housing recovery, and there isn't. There's some recovery, but certainly not to the degree that we need.
You know, when Obama came out and offered to provide mortgage relief for people, go talk to Obama, talk to the government, and they would help you renegotiate your mortgages if you're in foreclosure trouble. And they would renegotiate your mortgages at a lower rate, and you could, in theory, continue to live in your house. Everybody was thinking, oh, great, the government, everyone is thinking that they got me sidetracked here. I'm looking at the instant messages at the same time. Everyone thinks the government is there to help you. No, they're not. What they were doing was creating new original mortgages. You renegotiated the old mortgage, which they couldn't find. And if you ever got smart enough to figure that out, you might not have to pay on your mortgages. Huh? And what the government says, no, we're here to help you. Come on down. If you're having a little problem, we'll help renegotiate. What they did was give you a new mortgage with your new signature on it. And now they got you. Now they did have standing to break in, to come in and foreclose after that. But if they couldn't find the originals, if you didn't renegotiate, their goose was sautéed. We've got a caller from New Jersey, and we don't know the caller's name, so I guess that's our first question. Will a mystery caller sign in, please, and tell us your name?
This is Paul from New Jersey. I just wanted this thing you were talking about, the Federal Reserve notes, yeah, they're debts of obligation. You can't pay a tax for them either.
Mm-hmm. Well, not pay, you can discharge, but you can't
taxation.
Pay. Yeah. You know, yeah, we have... I'll tell you, here in Texas, I have yet to see, I don't know that they don't exist, but I have yet to see a tax form coming out from your local tax office and the rest of it that includes a dollar sign on it. They will send you a notice of taxes due, and they'll just say 518 or 518.36. And they leave it to you to assume they're talking about paper dollars, right?
Yep.
You make that assumption, and if you send paper dollars, they'll accept them. But they don't actually put the dollar sign in front of their notices because the Constitution still says at Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. They can't lawfully collect a debt that's not denominated in gold or silver coin, at least not within the state of Texas or any of the other states of the Union. Now, they have devices to get around this, but you understand what I'm saying, Paul?
Oh, I know what you're saying, because I don't pay your sales tax either.
Yeah. I understand. There's ways of getting around this. I get that. And there's ways of getting around some of this, but it requires study.
Like you say, Article 1, Section 10.
Yeah. Got to have gold and silver. That's at the state level, not at the federal level, not in Washington, D.C., not in the territories, but within the states of the Union. That's the law to this day.
Absolutely.
Right? And they dance around it. And the reason they don't put those dollar signs up there, in my opinion, is they don't want to be accused of fraud. They leave it up. Yeah. They just give you a number. It's ambiguous. Maybe they mean maybe they mean paper dollars. Maybe they mean acorns. Who knows? Maybe beans. Melody, you're talking about send them 518 and three quarters beans. Maybe you send them 519 beans and tell them to keep the change. Apply that extra quarter of a bean to your next tax bill.
Yeah, well, that's
anything else?
So I had a friend that, you know, with the Federal Reserve notes. The IRS can't accept them. If you go there with the Federal Reserve notes, they can't accept them.
You ask them specifically if they'll accept them, and you may run into someone. They don't even know what Federal Reserve notes are. They collect them, but they don't. The whole thing is, again, earlier question.
You hand them a note saying they're breaking the law. I hand them a slip saying they're breaking the law if they accept them.
Oh.
So USC 742, I think it is.
All right. All right, Paul, we want to thank you for your call.
Much.
All right, appreciate your call. Thank you for listening to the program. What else we have, Melody?
We got about, 2 minutes of the program?
I guess so.
So?
All right. Well, I don't know if you want to. Here's our Democrat representative praises the rise of stealth socialism in America. And this is an interesting article. This is in the Conservative Bite. In a recent interview with Salon, as a magazine, outspoken progressive Representative Alan Grayson, Democrat of Florida, hailed the rise of what he called stealth socialism through America's recent monetary decisions.
And we
asked
by
an interviewer whether the financial system was safer than it was back a few years ago. The Florida Democrat said, "We've had a government takeover of the bond market."
We got another caller, Al.
Stealth socialism has been created. Government simply ends up owning more and more. I think it's an insight. It's interesting because it's an insight into how government thinks. They intend to own it all, folks, and we're going to have stealth socialism. It's taking place. The politicians laugh about it, and most of us don't get it. But it's about government ultimately owning your property, my property, until we are nothing but peons and slaves. What do we got left in the program, Melody? We got 40 seconds thereabouts. Is the caller Norman still there from Illinois?
Yeah.
Oh, Norman, we only got about 30 seconds for you, so be quick.
Just wondering if you knew that Panama is having a banker holiday.
Nope.
Until
I hadn't heard about that.
Just
all right, that's something to look into. We'll take a look, and maybe we'll know more by next Monday. Thank you, Norman. We appreciate your call.
Yep.
Melody, we've had our business, our shot. It's done for the week. We're out of time. We want to thank all you folks for listening. We'll be back on Monday. I hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.